It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Excellent positive disruption. This is what Håkan Nordqvist believes the world needs to balance economic growth with environmental protection. He is the former head of sustainability, innovation at IKEA, and now the CEO of the Net Zero company. And he travels the world telling business leaders that sustainability is not just a responsibility, it's a business opportunity. He's in New Zealand for the Future State event next week in Auckland, talking about transforming business mindsets to fuel sustainability and innovation. And he's with me in the Auckland studio. Hello, what a pleasure. Nice to see you.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
29 years at IKEA, is that right?
That is correct. 29 years in IKEA.
Did that time that you spent at the company, did it sort of culminate in this role of sustainability innovation? Do you feel like that's where you were heading all the time?
Well, afterwards you can say that, but I had many roles, but I mostly enjoyed to combine sort of business and sustainability. Sustainability providing the purpose and the business roles providing sort of the edge in relation to both suppliers and customers.
Because it's not always two words that go together, certainly not in one job title.
No, it's not. But and I was asked to form this, so we didn't have that before. So I sort of started it off and built it up. And it was all about actually building new business opportunities for IKEA based in sustainability. So we released a strategy 2010-2011 where we realized that this is not business as usual. Very bold goals, sustainability goals, so we needed to innovate. And that's where we then sort of set that up, sustainability innovation. So based in sustainability, innovate, create new businesses for the company that could take the IKEA into the future with the sustainability as a base.
You did that because it's good for business or because it's good for the planet?
Both. I would say that, at least for me, sustainability is probably the biggest business opportunity any company can have moving forward. And I just think that IKEA was a bit, or was early realizing that, to find those type of things that would both improve the products and improve the planet and people's lives.
You've said that a lot of companies, their approach to sustainability is based around compliance. What is the difference? What is the real difference between taking a compliance approach and an innovation approach?
I would say that IKEA did that too. So complying with rules and legislation, complying with standards, ISO standards, sort of was the start of sustainability or environmental work at companies. And I still think quite a few companies are there, reporting structures. So they sort of set the purpose with sustainability to follow rules and to follow legislation and then fulfill their sustainability work. I see it differently. Of course, you need to comply. But that's not typically for sustainability. If there is a law or if there is a regulation or if there are standards out there that relates to your industry, you should comply, if it's sustainability or not. But if you see sustainability, if you look at the world around you and the societal development and where we're heading, sustainability poses a fantastic business opportunity for any company.
Yeah.
So to innovate, sort of take your way up to that level where you comply, and then innovate from a business point of view, that will take you quite far, I think, into the future.
Can you tell us about some of the projects that you were involved with at IKEA, a brand almost everyone knows? So how did you approach this sort of sustainability innovation, and what are you proud of?
Of course. As I said, we released a strategy 2011, People and Planet Positive, and after that, we took a new perspective, sort of from an innovation point of view. So identified a couple of areas where we felt that this is important areas for us as a company. We also had mandate in those areas from sort of consumers and society around us. One is energy. And IKEA has quite high climate goals. But they also want to involve their customers and consumers on the journey towards sort of net zero or climate positive. So what we did is we started to sort of explore how can we involve customers? How can we create a new business for IKEA? Starting selling solar panels, installations on the customer rooftops, which was, we did that a couple of countries, it went well. We expanded that then with energy storage, heat pumps, EV charging stations that you could buy from IKEA, but also renewable electricity. So you could, so we developed a small utility company where you, so one-stop shop, you go to IKEA, you buy your solar panels, your storage, and your heat pump, and your renewable electricity. So we took that from the beginning to the end, and it's now expanding all over the world. I think it's in live in 14 countries now. Mm. So that's, I think, was is one new business that we developed for IKEA. Another area we did quite a lot was food. So I think IKEA's restaurants is one of the top 10 restaurant chains in the world, if you... You don't believe that, but it's a lot of food that is sold.
Most New Zealanders haven't been to an IKEA and might be surprised to hear that food is part of the experience.
Oh, yeah, it is. And
I hear about meatballs.
Meatballs is the biggest product, so I don't know how many meatballs we sell, but it's a lot. And that's one of the reasons meatballs is made of meat. So we started, so we developed veggie balls. But those are for vegetarians already. So how do you take meat lovers in a direction where they still eat at IKEA, still eat the meatballs? So we did a lot around plant-based proteins to replace the meat protein with plant-based proteins. But we needed to have the texture, the taste, everything should be the same, hopefully to a lower price. And today you can buy the plant ball at the IKEA restaurant. You can buy it in a Swedish food market, take it home and sort of eat your plant balls. For me, I hardly feel the difference. Mm. And I've eaten a lot of meatballs at IKEA restaurant. So it's, which I think was a good project and good product. So the plant ball has around 4% of the climate footprint that a meatball has.
Gosh.
So from an environmental point of view, it's very, very good. From a health point of view, also very, very good because red meat is not always good for you if you eat too much. So that's one. Another, we did a lot around urban farming, vertical farming.
Yeah.
So we equipped sort of a 40-foot container with vertical farming equipment, put it outside a store, started to grow salad and greens, also ending up doing herbs. But with that, we could sort of all the salads for the IKEA restaurant to our customers and co-worker restaurants. And we also started a bit of a new business selling herbs and salads in the Swedish food market that customer could sort of take. So locally produced, same cost, which was the which is always the challenge you have if you innovate. How can you reach the same price level or cost level of a new product or a new way of producing something? But in the end, I think we succeeded to do that. So a couple of things we did there.
One of our listeners, Pip, asks, has IKEA reduced its packaging? That would go a long way to helping sustainability. I'm sure that's on the mind of the people at IKEA.
Of course. Packaging is a big thing for us. And we've taken away all, I think, so I have left IKEA now. Since 1.5 years ago.
So it's not your job to stand
exactly.
up IKEA on the radio anymore.
No. So, I mean, I can't speak for what has happened the last 1.5, 2 years, but it's packaging is a big thing for IKEA. Taking away plastics and packaging, everything should be cardboard and recycled cardboard. I don't know if it's 100% now or on the way to 100%.
Yeah, it's not moving in the wrong direction.
No, it's not.
Did you have some failures?
Oh, many.
But you're in business, so you're not meant to admit your failures.
No. I mean, I think if you work with innovation, if you don't fail, you don't innovate.
Yeah.
So
it's something we hear over and over again.
Yeah. You need to, and if you're in a corporate environment, failure is often not an option. If you're in sort of the corporate machine, if you work with innovation, you need to fail all the time. You need to trial and error, learn, and then try again. Learn, try again, and move on in that way. Which is why it's a bit hard to, and I actually don't know a lot of companies that are successful sort of from a corporate point of view to run innovation in a successful way. Because what you do most often is that you take the corporate parameters, the incentive programs, everything, and put that into the innovation space. It doesn't work.
Mm.
You need to have a totally different culture, totally different incentives, and a totally different way of doing stuff than what you do in a corporate environment.
And your senior leadership people need to understand that too,
yes.
Right? We're going to try some stuff. The
yes.
plan is to swing and miss a few times. I guess you need to make it... You need to manage the risk.
Yes.
So you can't sink the company if you
buy
something and it doesn't work.
No, you should have a set budget for what you want to do. That budget should be, in a way, untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy when the company goes well, we can sort of do innovation. When things go down a bit, we take that budget away. And it should be the other way around. You should always have a set budget for innovation because that's what's developing you. That's what's driving you forward. And if you have that, then you know that over time you will succeed if you have the right mindset and the right culture.
Yeah.
So if you do 10 projects, 8 fails, but the 2 that do not fail pays you back quickly the budget you've set.
I'm speaking with Håkan Nordqvist, the former head of sustainability innovation at IKEA. He's now the CEO of the Net Zero company, and he's in New Zealand for the Future State event next week in Auckland, 2nd of May, I think that is. There's an interesting question of whether a company should wait for consumer demand and respond to it, or whether it should try and lead or prompt consumer demand. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have. I think any company and any organization should need to look at themselves, not only one time, but constantly, and ask them questions like, what do we want to achieve? Why are we here? What type of future do we want to create? What do we want to contribute to? And depending on those type of answers, you would engage in different directions. For me, the underlying mega trends, there are a couple of them, but one of them are sustainability. And if you work with that and if you answer those questions and you adhere to the answers, then I think you would definitely engage and build sustainable businesses without consumer demands, because you will then create them. And even if you look at the sort of overall direction where the world is heading with climate change and a lot of other things, the business opportunity is there. It lies there. It just waits for you or someone to pick it up.
Just the details on that summit. Future State Technology Summit takes place Thursday, May 2nd. As I said, it's at Spark Arena and it's presented by the Spark Business Lab. I'm talking to one of the speakers. What is a circular business model? And how do you move your business into that model?
So circular business models means you reduce waste. You have more or less no waste in your value chain. You reuse, recycle, reproduce the material that you have in the value chain, which means that you don't take resources from nature, but you utilize the resources existing in society today to reproduce, reuse those resources for a very long time. When you can't use them anymore, you will take them down to molecules and then start it all over again.
Mm.
So it's a business model that sort of ends that extraction from the planet, which we do much too much today. I mean, Earth Overshoot Day, I don't know if it's in August, end of July now, which means that after that date, we're borrowing resources from next year. And everyone knows that if you borrow things, you have to pay them back. But it's really hard to do if you borrow resources from nature. So that's how you sort of take the circularity into, instead of extracting and throwing away, you are reusing, recycling, and reproducing the already existing resources into new products over time. And to do that in any company takes quite some effort. No one can do it alone. It's something you need to do and collaborate with society at large, with many players, to create the right infrastructures, the right material flows, the right production technologies to be able to do that.
It's got to be easy and it's got to be advantageous for people to take part in, right?
If yes.
It makes sense to you as a consumer or you as a producer. Otherwise, you're doing it out of some sense of worthiness, and that's not really sustainable.
No, it has to make sense from a business point of view.
Yeah. Should note, the Sustainable Business Network recently released a report that said that Auckland, the city, could generate up to $8.8 billion in economic activity by shifting from a linear model, take, make and waste, they call it, to a circular economy. But that's a big project. Have you seen a circular economy working at any sort of scale?
Good question. At scale, not so much. You could say that wood is a material that you could recycle, reuse many times. But I don't think we have the right infrastructure in place yet to do it in sort of at scale.
Mm.
But you can sort of take out wood of the forest, you replant the forest. If you have an FSC or positive forest management, you replant the forest so you get more forest than what you take out. You then do furniture or houses or whatever. When that's done, you can reuse the wood into other things. You take it down to chipboards or particle boards or MDFs. You again put it into a product. And when it's when you can't use it anymore, probably you burn it for energy.
Mm-hmm.
Or you take it down and put it down in the soil again.
Yeah. IKEA has done some interesting things. It started opening its own secondhand stores. It has a subscription model in some countries.
Yes.
Where people can rent stuff rather than own them. Are consumers embracing that? Have those pilots been a success?
Yeah, that was actually, we ran that in my team. So the circular part of it and renting secondhand. It does. It takes a lot of infrastructure, though, to do it. You don't just open a secondhand business or a leasing renting business. You need to have a digital infrastructure that supports it. You need to take back all the furniture and redo it, reproduce it, recycle material, and then put it out on the market again. But we, as I said, collaborated a lot with the local, so the cities, to build that infrastructure and to, from a small scale, scale it up city by city. So I don't think you can go any other way because you need that type of infrastructure, local production, local infrastructure to do it. And we did quite a lot of customer research, and customer wants it. It's just to make them aware of now it's here. And
gosh, that seems like an opportunity for New Zealand, doesn't it? I mean, we're a country made up of cities where you pretty much can get on the phone and get a hold of anyone. And, you know, we're small enough that you can make it work. And you would hope that we had the innovation mindset to do it. It seems like it would be an ideal sort of pilot program to run in a Wellington or in Auckland or a Christchurch or a Hamilton.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. What do you think of this right to repair movement? This is this idea that companies intentionally make their products difficult or impossible to repair, and that means there's nothing, nowhere they can go apart from landfill. What are your thoughts on consumers demanding the right to be able to repair things that they buy?
I think it's a part of the circular economy. So when you do products, they have to be modular in a way so that you can disassemble them into the materials that they contain of or the parts, and then you can recycle parts or reuse the parts. If you can't do that, the product is not fit for a circular economy. And I think it goes in the opposite direction of where we need to go. And of course, you, if you own a product, you should be able to repair it. For me, that's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So I think companies that are moving in that direction, they're locking themselves into a corner that they will not be able to come out of.
Some new EU rules have just gone into effect that companies have to substantiate their environmental claims. Do you find this sort of legislation helpful, or do you think it just encourages more box ticking or a box ticking approach to sustainability?
It's again a good question. I think all legislation is good. Companies need legislation because when you know the rules, it's easy for a company to adapt to the rules and play according to the rules. I think governments and regions have a responsibility to legislate around sustainability. The problem is then if you're a sort of a compliance approach and you're ticking the box, but you don't have the intention to fulfill the whole journey around it, it doesn't really help. So it has to be a play between governments, institutions, companies to have a common vision of where we want to go. So it's not yet about legislation. You need to communicate it, create a narrative around the legislation, why we're doing it, and engage companies into it. Otherwise, it could be a box-ticking exercise, which is just a waste of time and money.
When you leave New Zealand eventually and return home, what's the idea you hope will stick with New Zealanders?
It's a good question. I think what is helping companies to realize if they want to transform, I mean, you can do two things. You have an operation, a company already, and you want to make that more sustainable. The second alternative is that you say, okay, I want to build a sustainable business, which is a bit of a different there. So the first one is I look at my business, I comply with the legislations and rules, and I will make it as sustainable as I can. The second one is I take a look at my company and my business model and say, how can I change to build a sustainable company for the future? Both takes a lot of effort. Both are, of course, good. Personally, I sort of more towards the second one, to build sustainable businesses. If you do that, you need to change your mindset. You need to be able to, what we talked about a bit in the beginning, allow or create spaces in your organization where innovation can happen. You need to create sort of a culture where people can fail and learn and move on without sort of feeling bad about it. You need to be able to stay in that, I call it deceptive disappointment phase, when you're sort of, people are laughing at you more or less because you're doing crazy things. Stay there to stay, because if you're on the right things, wonderful things will come out. And you need to hire, I call them the crazy people. You need to hire crazy people. And when I say that, people that are crazy enough to believe that they can change the world. And if you don't believe that you can change the world or want to change the world, you won't. Then you will be sort of where you are and you will improve incrementally what you're doing. But if you take in those people that really want to change the world, you put them in a place where the culture is you can fail and learn, you can develop, and we force them to stay in that space. things will happen. So I think I hope that will be one thing that to be able to move and to transform, we need to do things differently. We can't just think that we're doing the same things all over again, just a bit better. Nothing will change. We will just get a bit better, but we won't change anything.
What a pleasure to meet you. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Håkan Nordqvist is the former head of sustainability innovation at IKEA, now the CEO of Net Zero Company. He's in New Zealand for the Future State event, the Technology Summit, taking place next Thursday at Spark Arena, and it's presented by the Spark Business Lab.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.